Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today and tomorrow as well, as a matter of fact. It's the panel, and this is the part of the show where we talk about world news and regional news and national news. And on the panel today, WAMC's Alan Shartok, communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois, and chairman of the Capital District Latinos, Dan Irizarry. Good morning, all.
Hey. Good morning.
Hey.
Wow. Beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Try that again. Good morning, all.
Hey.
That's better. If you want to join in the conversation, we'd love to hear from you briefly. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Panel at WAMC.org. Do try to keep the letters brief. One per day per customer. Don't include links. We cannot click them. Alan will get a printout, which we then put in the recycler after he reads them. Don't use abbreviations, proofread, that sort of thing.
Civil.
Yeah. That's nice. A panel at WAMC.org. Now, if you are watching the Olympics on tape delay, I encourage you to turn the radio down for about a minute, minute and a half here. Spoiler alert. And I'll count to five, five, four, three, two, one. How about the U.S. women's hockey team? They won the gold. They beat Canada.
Yay.
Jocelyn Lemereau Davidson scored in the first extra round of the first shootout tiebreaker in Olympic women's history to beat Canada 3-2. And I got to tell you, that Canadian team was dynamite. I saw some of the early rounds, and they beat most NHL teams on most nights. So the U.S. team really did something great there.
Yay.
It was very wonderfully exciting.
Did you watch?
I saw just the end, and then I saw them get the medals, and it was... It's quite a, you know, I don't follow women's hockey, but wow, I know enough to know that that's a big, big victory.
They won the inaugural women's gold in 1998, the U.S. team, and then have not won since. Canada is it's like the 27 Yankees. They're a juggernaut.
They win everything.
And breaking news, and I know this will interest you, Teresa, U.S. beat Canada in men's curling and will play for the gold.
I was just at the edge of my chair on that one.
Why does curling get no respect?
And also, first time ever. Oh, am I getting out ahead of you? You done with your Olympic?
No, go ahead.
Women's cross country gold.
Oh, that's terrific.
First time ever. There's two women's pair, woman, and the one woman on the team who has a child from Alaska. Anyway, just by a tip of a ski.
Did she carry the child with her?
No. But just very, very exciting.
Well, that's exciting. Okay, now, I don't know how to signal you to turn your radio back up, but we're done talking. We're talking about the Olympics, and we're all finished now. Alan, you look nonplussed about the whole Olympic thing.
No, I don't know much about it. So I try when I don't know about things to shut up. Now, I know there are people who don't believe that.
No,
that is the case.
That's breaking news.
I just don't know. I just don't know anything about that.
Well, once again, the email address here is panel at WAMC.org if you want to weigh in. And the panel today is Teresa Bourgeois and Dan Irizarry and Alan Shartok. A week after a shooter shot and killed 17 people in a Florida high school, thousands of protesters, including many angry teenagers, swarmed into the Florida State Capitol yesterday, calling for changes to gun laws, a ban on assault-type weapons, and improved care for the mentally ill. The group reportedly included more than 100 survivors of the February 14th attack at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. In Washington, students and parents delivered emotional appeals to President Trump to act on school safety and guns. The president promised to be very strong on background checks, adding that, quote, we're going to do plenty of other things. At a news conference Wednesday, Broward County sheriffs ordered all deputies who qualify to begin carrying rifles on school grounds. Mm-hmm. The rifles will be locked in patrol cars when not in use until they can secure gun lockers. And President Trump, again, raising the idea of arming teachers. The president said that one of the victims, an assistant football coach at the high school in Parkland, if he had been armed, he would have shot, and that would have been the end of it. Now, comments come as lawmakers in several states wrestle with the idea of letting teachers carry guns, including in Florida. Betsy DeVos has called arming teachers an option for states. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten calls that a horrible idea. The Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence says at least eight states allow or don't specifically prohibit concealed weapons in K through 12 schools. So, Alan, you said earlier in the week you're feeling a groundswell and some momentum here. It appears that that carried on yesterday.
I've never seen anything like it, Ray. You know, these kids are magnificent. The fact that, you know, they're staying with it, they've raised a ton of money, by the way, to continue this thing. And they are magnificent, as I just said. The fact is that the news media, whether we like to see this or not, are partners in this. And they are giving these kids a tremendous amount of coverage. This thing, as was mentioned by Rex Smith on the Media Project this week, is akin to what happened during the Vietnam War, when people got so upset. And you know, in order to get upset, you have to have a horse in the race. Many people who would have been dragged off to Vietnam were really marching around and saying, we don't want this. It was the only reason. It happened to be a stupid war. But the fact of the matter is that the same thing is happening here. People don't want killers, heinous killers, coming into their high schools and shooting them. And they know that this is a possibility.
I think it's really encouraging to see. I agree with you, Alan. It's just so heartening to see these young people step up. And the eloquence they are displaying is just unbelievable. And the fact that they are willing to speak truth to power is a lesson for us all, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
they have the chutzpah to get up there and declare truths that we see all the time, but we're just so cowed by the NRA or the political environment, we're afraid to speak them ourselves. But these young people really give us that sense of hope, I think.
We never thought it was, I mean, I've been talking about the NRA for these microphones for a long time. We know how much power they have. It's almost as if we've gone to sleep and given up and say, well, they're going to have that power. There are 300 million Americans. There are 300 million guns, at least 300 million guns. And therefore, there's really not all that much we can do. And yet, these kids come out, and that kid yesterday looks at Marco Rubio, and he says, so are you going to continue to take money from the NRA mm-hmm. or not? Mm-hmm. And Rubio says, basically, yes, I am. And the crowd, the 7,000 people at CNN, go crazy, booing him. Yeah. That must have given him a little something to think about.
Yeah, and I think that what came to mind while I was watching this whole discussion on CNN last night was really the idea of cognitive dissonance, right?
Sure.
You have somebody standing before a crowd of people who've been hurt by this mass shooting, and they're struggling to justify their position. So you have Marco Rubio, he looked like a deer in the headlights, trying to say to those young people, trying to thread the needle, trying to justify his position, trying to say that since I was a dog catcher and then I ascended, I've always had the same position. Well, you know what? It just doesn't square anymore. And we can't, and these young people are telling us, we cannot accept this any longer. We have to do something. And they are of the age, right?
Yes. And, you know, politicians recognize trouble when they see it.
Oh,
and trouble
right.
is
oh,
always
yeah.
defined as, is this going to cost me the next election? Now, Rubio, of course, is very lucky because he doesn't have to run for office in 2018. Mm. So he'll have some time and an eternity of time, you know, to make it up. But, you know, at some point you see the train coming down the track. You see that this is a dangerous one, that these kids aren't kidding, and that these kids are going to be voters soon.
That's right. I think that's it. Yep.
I think I applaud Senator Rubio for attending the CNN event because Governor Scott, who should have been there, did not attend. The President Trump was invited or to send somebody, did not attend. So at least Senator Rubio went. And you did see what happens when they are asked pointed questions. Mm-hmm. And I followed Twitter a lot. I'm on Twitter. I follow Twitter. And even you saw some of the journalists on Twitter saying, I think it was a wake-up call that what if they asked some more pointed questions like the kids are asking? Because that's what the kids' questions are so I don't know if they're raw or clear or whatever, but they are astounding. Mm. The White House event was, as you would imagine, it scripted. I mean, the Democrats would have scripted it too. Sure. And so the content was along the lines of the NRA themes, but it was still very powerful. The one thing I will say in support of the White House event is that they did bring in the urban violence as well, because most of what we've been talking about in the last week are these attacks and that have been mostly in suburban schools. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, it was all charter schools, but they talked about violence in the schools and around the schools in D.C., which is important.
And yet, Teresa, when that papa got up there and just basically lectured the president.
Right.
That was pretty powerful stuff.
I thought it was powerful.
And he used the P word. He says, I'm really peed off, you know. He said, I have to go to the cemetery to visit my daughter now. That was something.
But I'm sorry.
No, that's good. Good, Teresa.
But in listening to that, what the president's then focus was on arming teachers. Now, I am the daughter of two teachers passed away, but my father was a high school teacher. My mother taught kindergarten, first, second grade, and I'd love for our listeners who are teachers to write in and tell us what they think. But my parents, I'm sure, would have never wanted to be armed in the classroom. And this notion that the solution to this is to arm our teachers, I just think is to add more guns to the mix.
And it makes the teachers targets, if you think about it, because if the teacher's got a, if the shooter knows the teacher has a gun, then you go for the teacher. And there's a difference between having, albeit the wrong word, a Tommy gun and a revolver, you know, is quite substantial.
But to, you know, they're already being asked, and you saw the consequences of that last week, to shield their students. Mm-hmm. And they're dying, and they're being murdered in the process of shielding their students. And then to ask them to carry weapons. And you saw, you know, we may get to this later, but Congresswoman Tenney received a lot of national criticism for her comments yesterday about
Democrats.
Deservedly
so, by the way.
Do you want to hear that? I have that ready to go.
I'd love to hear it.
Michael, you want to hear that?
Obviously, there's a lot of politics in it. It's interesting that so many of these people that commit the mass murders end up being Democrats, but we don't want to, the media doesn't talk about that either.
That was New York 22nd District Congresswoman Claudia Tenney on Talk 1300 Radio yesterday, and responding to a question about inner-city violence and why Democrats in Congress and the media don't call for tougher mandatory terms for such urban crimes.
But also making the point, I think, Gray, that Democrats are the heinous killers. That was what made the news.
Right.
That most of these killers are Democrats. And that really set off a firestorm.
But the notion that we would not want to have our schools gun-free schools, which is one of the other things, you know, she talked about, that they not be gun-free, you know, that we need to get our teachers armed and that we need to fortify our schools. And talking about fortifying our schools, it came up in all of the conversations. I think about the pictures of the schools in Detroit or Baltimore or some of our rural areas where the roofs are leaking and, you know, they don't have enough heat. Remember in Baltimore, they had to close the schools a couple times this winter because there wasn't even enough heat. And you're talking about you're going to fortify the walls of the schools against high-powered weapons? I mean, that's not the solution. Let's get the high-powered weapons out of the hands of people. Why won't we talk about that? That's what we need to talk about.
And that's what's stunning about the conversation, is that you continue to have this parade of Republicans, mostly, that are constantly just making us chase these rabbits of things like mental illness, right? They don't want to talk about stopping the accessibility to these guns of weapons of mass destruction, right, or mass shooting weapons. They want to talk about, oh, we have to have better mental health, which is absolutely true. But again, it's just blaming people when the true cause of this is not, like the NRA likes to say, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Come on. I mean, are we really still having that discussion.
Well, as Eddie Izzard said, people help.
Yeah, right.
And we know that states where they have made it tougher to have these have had a lowering of violence, Connecticut being a good example after Sandy Hook. We know that it works, and still the gun lobby, the gun manufacturers, and the right-wingers persist in this nonsense.
And in the CNN, I will say, I thought that the NRA representative, Loesch, she did a great job of representing the NRA. Oh, but CNN should have had somebody from Moms Demand, you know, Action, or the Brady campaign, or somebody on the other side, because so much of what she said was not consistent with NRA policy, and she filibustered quite
a bit
and distracted from the core issues.
And that's the problem with having young people who are very passionate, but they don't have all of the background and the science and the statistics behind them. And a reporter, for instance, who might have been in the audience and asking, or a mother from a concerned group, would have asked much more pointed questions and not let her kind of wiggle out
and,
of these
and yet,
questions.
And yet, you're exactly right, but and yet, those kids are not trained reporters, and they went right for the heart, and their effectiveness was extraordinary. When they looked at Marco Rubio and said, "So, are you going to take more money from the NRA?" And he and then finally said yes, and he got roundly booed. And I wanted to say this before, and that is, that's the one thing that scares the hell out of politicians, which is when they see passion. When they see passion that's going to ignite a whole group who have gone to sleep. Let's face it, kids do not vote the way that they should in this country.
And yeah. I read an amazing statistic. In the last week, more than 75,000 people have contacted the Moms Demand Action, this grassroots group, and joined just in the last week. This has ignited people all over the country.
We need to take a brief break here for news from the BBC. If you want to get your thoughts in, keep them brief, but email us at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And the panel today, Dan Irizarry, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Shartok, will be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 9:34, Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, and our panel continues with Teresa Bourgeois, Dan Irizarry, and Alan Shartok, and of course you at panel@wamc.org. By the way, I misquoted Eddie Izzard from, I think it was his first TV special here in the States. He said, "Guns don't kill people, people kill people, but the guns help." I think that was his quote from the...
I got that from you.
Yeah. That was a great special. All right. So we have letters. Let's do that, and then we'll move on.
Okay, boss. And speaking of boss, I have to say, you know, I've gotten a certain amount of mail saying, wait a second now. Who's the boss of who? Is Ray the boss of you?
Yes.
Are you the boss of Ray?
What do you mean?
The answer is, Ray is the boss of me when it comes to this...
Who wrote that?
I don't want to... I can't throw anybody under the bus.
Oh, that's funny.
But I just want to make it clear, you are the boss of me during this show, as Joe is also.
Okay.
And you don't have to listen to me about anything I say.
By the premise, by the gag. Sure. Okay, fine. Let's
Paul
move on.
Paul says, armed teachers. Good morning, panel. Just for the record, I love curling. On the subject of armed teachers, let's not forget that most mass murderers go into the situation wanting to die anyway. You know that, Hal? Okay.
It's a generalization, but
okay, you know,
could
that.
Be.
Peter says, guns. Panel, Rubio and the NRA will not have the last word. The young people of our nation will. And that's from Peter. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
I think it's quite encouraging.
It's up to all of us, Peter.
Yeah. And Frank says, school shooting swap. Panel, the NRA loves to boost the Second Amendment. Well, what if the Parkland school shooting was perpetrated by a Muslim terrorist? The Republicans and maybe even the NRA would be falling over each other trying to ban AR-15s, bump stocks, AK-47s, etc. On the contrary,
no.
I think you're entirely wrong, Frank, even though I very much respect your right to write the letter. This is a big business. These companies are making a ton of money on these guns, and if a Muslim group did what you suspect they could do, they would say if there were more guns, they would have been dealt with. I'm sure of it. Okay.
I think that I agree with him that the response would be different. But I don't think the response would be get rid of the guns. It would be deport Muslims.
Frank continued. He said America doesn't realize that way more innocent Americans die every day from random gun violence than are killed by foreign terrorists. So why don't we treat this gun epidemic for what it is an unnecessary epidemic that can be solved by rational adults.
It is a public health crisis, that's for sure.
It's all about money, folks.
It's a public health crisis.
And Jim says, arming teachers, I cannot understand why there is a discussion among lawmakers to arm teachers. I see lawmakers and police officials quoted in the media, but nothing from teachers in the field. So here's a quote from you. When guns are brought into my classroom, it will be time for me to change professions, and that's Jim in Wineskill.
Good point.
And then Claude says, guns in schools. If guns are required or supplied to every school in the country, it will be a sales boom for gun dealers. Interesting. And benefit the manufacturers and the NRA. Maybe they will donate them free. And that's from Claude in Albany. I hadn't even thought of that one. Susan says about Claudia Tenney. Congresswoman Tenney needs to provide her source that many mass shooters end up being Democrats. She's either telling the truth or she is lying. A divisive comment like that needs to be factual. What is her source? And that's from Susan.
I wonder where her constituents are on this issue. When you saw the recent polling that 97% of the American people support some changes and restrictions and on the guns issue, you know, where her constituents is solidly behind the NRA as she is?
Well, she later issued a statement, and she said, quote, "We will continue to stand up for law-abiding citizens who are smeared by anti-gun liberal elitists."
Right.
Wow.
That's why. Is that where her constituents are? Is that where
the
position
of making
her?
She's making a bet that is where they are.
You think
the question is there movement or not? I mean, we know that if you ride around upstate New York, you're going to see repeal the SAFE Act signs all over the place. But when it comes to your children getting, or your grandchildren, or your nieces or nephews getting slaughtered in their schools by some demented soul, maybe it's time to make some changes.
You think the teachers in her district are for arming themselves? I mean, I think that'd be interesting.
I bet not.
Does anybody at all think about what a school looks like? Have you what all these hallways? And can you imagine?
Yeah, the ricocheting and
the ricocheting that could go on when you have two people, one with an AR-15 and another one, supposedly they're not going to be arming them with AR-15s, with a handgun with, let's say, a 15-round clip.
Yep.
And all these kids in the middle.
As they're trying to usher kids into closets or under
it's
desks, they're supposed to pull out a gun and start.
It's the most insane kind of reasoning that you could ever come up with. Here we are talking about this like it might be on the horizon.
And what it does is distract from the conversations that we should be having about
getting
background
rid of these
checks,
guns.
About waiting periods, about raising the age, about limiting access to ammunition. And so on and so forth, and reducing access to these weapons of war.
Dave writes to us from an educator. Good morning, panel.
Good morning, Dave.
The discussion of arming Americans' teachers is ridiculous. Educators and their students have a social contract that is based on trust. Teaching and learning do not happen unless the contract is valued. Through mutual respect, care, kindness, and attending to education above all, arming teachers would disrupt this contract by making students into potential targets and teachers into potential killers. The very idea makes me cringe, and that's from Dave over at Binghamton, where he's a professor.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Our very good friend Eric writes on the NRA, good morning, panel. Nothing is going to change with respect to our current political climate, including the NRA's influence on Congress, until term limits are implemented. Without term limits, Congress is at both the state and federal level will always be beholden to special interests. Well, you know, Eric, even though I have great affection for you and you know what you say, let's say you had a. I'm all for term limits. Don't get me wrong. I think that this system has gotten so corruptive now that we really do have to change it. I'm at war with my political science colleagues who say it's an electoral right to elect anybody you want. But I think the game is so loaded, you have to have it. Anyway, but Eric's point is extremely interesting because let's say I'm running for political office in a term-limited Congress. You think I'm not going to go ask the NRA for $1 million or for $500,000 to give me? They will, even though there are term limits. So thanks.
So, as you know, I strongly oppose term limits. I think there are term limits. It's called voting. And I do think and hope that more, you know, that's one of the things that these young people have been talking about is voting. And I do hope that this energizes more people to register and more people to vote. And it'll be interesting to see what in Florida, you know, as Judith Eng points out, a number of people move from Puerto Rico into Florida. And how is that going to change the dynamic?
Well, very respectfully to you, Teresa, you know, we don't agree on this. When you allow Boss Hasty in the Assembly and Flanagan in the Senate to stand up before a computer and draw their own lines where they can't lose, please, this is unacceptable. The game, Teresa, is loaded.
Well, what about in Pennsylvania where the courts have made them redraw the maps?
Well,
I mean, that's what you have to go after. You have to go after gerrymandering. You have to go after this assault on the census. And but experience matters. I think there's value in experience. And
you know,
I think
for these guys' experience?
If people don't respond to their districts, they should be voted out. And also, you need to start running in these seats. There are more than 25 people in Florida, I read, that are Republicans, NRA supporters running uncontested. Now, hopefully that will change. Hopefully this will wake people up to get more people to contest some of these seats.
The last word goes to you, and I want you to have that last word.
I know we disagree on
even
this.
Even though
you think I'm wrong.
Anyway.
Eric did it again.
Well, he's wrong about me being wrong, but go ahead. What's the next letter?
But you're wrong about me being wrong about
you. All right, you two, if I have to stop this show.
Okay. Don't make me go back there.
Here we go.
Don't make me have to pull over.
George says, on NRA commercials, panel, if you want to be shocked and truly chilled to the bone, check out some of the NRA online commercials. To them, it's not about guns, but about a culture that's trying to defend this country against a liberal progressive onslaught. Essentially, in these spots, they're promoting violence against anyone who would try to destroy the country's traditional, in quotes, culture. Very scary stuff. And that's from George in Glenside, Pennsylvania.
You know, a statistic I came across before I came here was that the United States makes up 5% of the population of the world. But we have 45% of privately owned guns. So think about that for a minute. We have almost a couple of guns for every person.
No, there's no question.
Okay.
We
there's
do.
Just too many
and
weapons.
And yet we're supposed to sit around and say, think about all these other ideas, mental health and all these other cutesy
mental
red
health
herrings.
Mental health, you're so right, Dan. Mental health from who? From an administration that is cutting the mental health budget. So they're yelling mental health on one hand, and then they're saying forget about it.
Of course.
Well, as I sat and listened to that White House event, all I could think of is why doesn't somebody say, how come you cut 30% or propose cutting 30% out of the school violence funding program?
Sorry. Let's take a quick break here. It's the roundtable panel. We have Dan Irizarry and Teresa Bourgeois and Alan Chartok and you at panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable on WAMC 946 on a Thursday morning. That's JMO's Jazz Band. You remember the Allman Brothers? One of the original drummers, JMO. He's bringing his jazz group to the Egg tomorrow night at 8 p.m. I'll never forget the first time I saw them at the Palace. Oh,
be there or be square.
1979 or so.
Rockin'?
Oh,
nice.
Yeah, it was great. So that's cool. JMO's Jazz Band at the Egg tomorrow night. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. And what a panel we have today. Very exciting. Always great when Teresa is here. Teresa Bourgeois is here. And Alan Chartok and Dan Irizarry. And, of course, you weighing in via email. And we have more emails. Oh, boy.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, yeah. Want to read some? That would be a cue.
Okay. Aaron says, correct the record about video games. Good morning, panel. Please correct the record. Teresa incorrectly stated that video games contribute to gun violence in America. A Google search will show we play no more violent video games and other industrialized nations such as Japan. This is dangerous. And the same talking points heard on Fox News and Alex Jones. Please do better. And that's from Aaron. Okay, but Teresa, do you want to answer that?
Well, I don't think I said that today, but I have said that in the past, and I do think that you see case after case of some of these kids who are isolated, and they spend hours and hours and hours, it's reported, that just watching and looking at these violent video games.
So it may not be the only reason, but it has to be a contributing reason. I'm with you, Teresa. Let me defend you on this.
Desensitizes them to violence. And so I don't think it's the only reason, but I do think that you saw that in Columbine with those Columbine kids and others. I'm not saying that's why they did it, but it's part of the of part of the problem.
So, in short, you're not taking it back?
No, I'm not taking it.
Excellent. Brenda says, of guns, if people kill and guns don't, a good reason to keep them separated. Brenda.
That's some common sense.
Thank you, Brenda.
Okay, Kevin says, disappointed. I just want to express my disappointment in our president. To listen to him tell those families that their ideas were less good or not so good after this listening session, I was greatly disappointed. How dare he tell these grieving families their ideas are less good? Thank you for your time. Warmly from Kevin.
You do have to wonder how different presidents would have handled that same situation.
Karen says, Fox is dangerous as the NRA. I just watched Fox News Online about the president's meeting with survivors and family members. The only part that they showed was Trump praising the idea of army teachers, etc. If that's all you watch, that's all you know. Those viewers need a daily dose of WAMC. And that's
well, there, that's save that for the fun drive.
That's from
it's
Karen.
Nice.
Did anybody see this young man who was in that meeting who talked about Australia?
Yeah.
He said, you know, in 1999, the Australians had a mass shooting. And what happened? They got together. They looked at legislative responses to it. And he said, you know what? Since then, zero.
And they did zero a lot mission. Of things. I understand. Somebody wrote us yesterday and said, I hadn't realized this, that in addition to putting a lot of difficulty in getting a gun, they started to confiscate guns.
Oh, boy.
High-powered
yeah.
weapons.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, Vice President Pence spoke yesterday at the beginning of this White House event and was there offering his, you know, thoughts and prayers and best wishes. And I encourage everyone to go to everytown.org and look up Mike Pence and his record on the gun issue.
And what's everytown.org?
It's the organization that Mike Bloomberg started. There are four or five key organizations that work on gun violence, addressing gun violence. There's the Brady Campaign. There's Moms Demand Action. There's everytown.org. And it has just some good basic data on use of guns and potential solutions, and then where people stand on the issue. Now, and it has a really good overview. And Mike Pence has stood solidly with the NRA as a governor and a member of Congress.
Judy says, guns in schools. I'm the mother of 3- and 4-year-old. They're supposed to be enrolled in school this fall. I'm not sure I'll be sending my kids to school until this is fixed. I don't want guns in schools. My children's lives are worth too much to me. The problem I see is that the NRA has effectively prohibited any studies to be done on gun violence, so now they could stall by saying we need research. Interesting point.
And didn't they defund the whole federal guns study?
That's what
CDC, CDC.
The federal government is not allowed to fund research on gun violence, and that's one of the things. It's an easy change that could be made. And they also, you know, the NRA representative on CNN was talking last night about how the background check system doesn't work. Well, one of the reasons the background check system doesn't work as well as it is because they have constantly lobbied to not fund it properly, and they've had advocated a lot of provisions that make it not effective.
Of course, if you're in Chicago and you have an illegal gun, you're not getting a background check anyway. And I think a lot of times when there is a horrendous situation like in Parkland, we do forget about the fact that there are so many illegal guns in this country. And the go to Chicago and just look how many people have been gunned down over the past several years.
Yeah, so
illegal guns.
But what's your argument?
Argument is they have some of the toughest gun laws in the country.
But, right, but Indiana doesn't, and that's where they come
that's
from.
Right.
I worked on gun
yeah.
violence in Boston, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. But,
no, no, no.
But we looked at, when I was working at gun violence in Boston, they looked at where were the guns coming from. Most of them were coming from North Carolina.
Mm.
The
right.
guns in Boston were coming from North Carolina. That's why you need, it's very important to have city, state regulations, but that's why you need an overall federal approach.
Right, because you just bring them in from the adjoining states.
Well, first of all, you're both right, but I have to say that in this, and I made this point earlier, that in the states, despite that have right. made changes, like Connecticut, the amount of violence has gone down.
Right. It doesn't mean you don't. I mean, yeah. right now, I think a great thing, given the Republicans are not going to move at the federal level, I think the best thing could happen now is work with your mayors, work with your county executives, work with your state legislature to see if you can get these changes, because you saw what happened in Connecticut and you saw changes. So, but we'll see what happens.
Robert writes, mass shootings in schools. Please address the unmentioned fact that boys, we have done this, by the way, that boys are the ones pulling the trigger. We need to address what it means to be a man in this culture and how bullying affects boys, and that's a thank you. Thank you for that.
Caucasian boys. And this bullying issue and isolating people who are different.
That is huge.
That's a huge yeah. problem.
Because it just creates that whole, that moment when that mind is evolving, right? Between the ages of 16 and 21, and that executive function is not quite what it needs to be. That's when we have these situations where young white men, mostly, as you pointed out, are getting access to these guns and committing these horrendous acts. And by the way, I think it's important to point out that on one study I saw in Vox says that of a certain amount of mass shootings in a certain limited amount of time, I think it was 570 mass shootings, only 22% of the people who committed those crimes suffered from mental illness. So I think, again, the mental illness is an issue that has to be addressed. Just forget about the guns. Just all over the place. I mean, our young people are taking a staggering amount of medication to deal with anxiety and depression. I mean, I think it's something like 1 in 4 teenagers are being prescribed these drugs. So there is mental illness is an issue that we just try to look away from, like opioid addiction and like so many other issues.
How about over-medication?
Yeah, well, definitely look at over-medication. But this bullying in the schools is a real, and isolating young people who are different. I mean, that's the one thing we could do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things.
Tracy writes, Democrats are mass killers. You aired the quote from the Republican representative in New York without countering it by facts. According to Snopes, S-N-O-P-E-S .com, the claim is mostly false. She is disgusting. She is a disgusting individual to make political points from these tragedies. That's what it says. Okay. Okay. Anyway, that's from Stephanie.
Thank you. So what the question is,
what?
Are her constituents, you know, with her or not?
Ryan says mass shootings, two notable things stick out to me. One is that there was armed guards at Columbine, according to Bowling for Columbine. The other is that the second most common denominator in mass shootings after guns is not mental health, but domestic violence.
Right.
And that's from Ron.
That's a good point.
And then we heard from John. Where does the NRA get its money? The dues from 500,000 members doesn't seem to be enough to fund this political action that they undertake.
That's
true.
A ruse.
We know, and we've talked about where they get their money.
They really are an organization of manufacturers. They used to be representing gun owners, and now really in the last 15 to 20 years, maybe even a little longer, some other people, the listener could correct me, but they've shifted to really be an organization who act on behalf of gun manufacturers. It's an interesting thing. Andrew Russ Sorkin from the New York Times had a piece the other day about, can you approach this from a financial perspective? And the Florida Teachers Union a part of their pension is invested in gun manufacturers. And they called out Governor Scott yesterday also because he has given government resources to bring in companies to manufacture these high-powered weapons in Florida. And so, you know, where are pension funds invested? Where are personal funds invested? And what if, as Andrew Rose Sorkin, I don't know if this is a good idea or not, but what if PayPal and the Visa and these other credit card companies said, okay, we won't, you can't use our services to purchase high-powered weapons. Would that change things? Wacky idea, but it's a different approach.
Has anybody talked on the show about the nexus between these gun groups in Russia and the connection with the NRA here? I mean, especially as we were coming to the 2016 election. I mean, there are definite connections. I mean, the whole thing about the bots going to work. I know I'm getting
on
ahead.
Twitter and otherwise.
Right.
We may not get to that, but Twitter suspending thousands of suspected bot accounts.
Your point is extremely well taken. We do know from a bunch of left-wing Democrats? No, we know from President Trump's top people that the name of the game for the Russians is to cause as much internal chaos as possible. And here's a good example.
Absolutely.
You get involved in this gun thing.
All right, we need to take a quick break here for news. We have a great panel here at WAMC's Alan Shartok, communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois, and chairman of the Capital District Latinos, Dan Irizarry. And the email address is panel@wamc.org. Dan wrote a neat op-ed piece in the Times Union on, I believe it was on Sunday, in the Sunday Times Union.
I think so.
And we're going to talk about that coming up after the news and more of your letters, of course. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, Thursday morning, 10:05. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel on the home stretch here with Alan Shartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Dan Irizarry. Of course, you can weigh in at panel@wamc.org. And we've had a never-ending stack of emails.
We have. Can I just ask, Dan has a very important position in our community, and I just want to make sure everybody knows what your job is.
Well, after hours, when I stopped working for the state of New York, I am the chairman of Capital District Latinos, which is a not-for-profit that has been set up to try to create the conditions for the success of the Latino community.
You bet.
And we've been in existence for 5 years, and we were the driving force behind the chemical dependency treatment program, first bilingual such program in the Capital District. And we just bought a church, by the way. We're neighbors.
Oh, down St. Patrick's?
St. John's.
St. John's.
What time is Mass?
Great. Where is that? On Central Avenue?
160 Central Avenue, yep.
Yeah.
And we're about to figure out what we're going to do with all that space.
So not services.
Oh, a combination of things, but not chemical dependency services.
No, I meant religious services.
Well, we might even allow some struggling congregations.
Interesting.
Bilingual congregations or Spanish-dominant congregations. But that's all in the planning stages.
That's cool.
That's fantastic.
Okay.
Great work.
Melissa writes, Chicago gun crime and gun laws. Morning. Sorry for the second email. Oh, my.
You broke the rules.
But the talking point of Chicago's gun laws and homicides rates really needs to be corrected. Chicago no longer has the strictest gun laws in the country. Most of the laws that were enacted have been repealed. Furthermore, Chicago's homicide rate per capita isn't even in the top five. Indianapolis, New Orleans, where are we going next week?
Memphis, bring your gun.
St. Louis have higher per capita rates. Okay. There you go. Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to put that here.
There you go. Okay. Put it in the recycle bin.
Carol says, gun control. I believe it was one of the victim's fathers that said it's too late. The guns are already out there and the crazy people are already out there, too. I am for gun control, specifically banning assault weapons. But this statement struck me, and I'm interested in your thoughts. Well, he's certainly not alone, seeing if you got one or two guns. I've read both statistics. For every American, that's huge. How you put that genie back in the bottle is going to be very interesting. Now, in Australia, they did it, or they made great progress in doing it. But, there are an awful lot of guns out there, no question. I have to read this. It says here, read this to decide if it's okay to air.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's always a red flag.
Yeah, so let's go on to the next one.
Okay, I'm going to read just the first paragraph. Esteemed panel, but Alan in particular.
Uh-oh.
I would like to issue you a challenge. For once, when discussing the issue, have the integrity to invite a panelist who is educated in firearms instead of having an echo chamber of fear-mongering and inaccurate information. So I read the first paragraph. Thank you for your thoughts.
Thank you.
I always say thank you, but I don't always mean thank you. Sometimes I mean a different first word.
No, but having people who, you know, because I know for me, this whole issue of defining what are high-powered weapons is a really tricky one, and it came up at the event last night, mm-hmm. how to do it legislatively. When we were working on gun legislation in the 80s, that was a big challenge of how to write the legislation to mm-hmm. really get the outcome that you're seeking. And it's not taking away guns from hunters. That's not the outcome.
I got to go fast here because, I know we want to get to a very important subject. Rosalind, guns and teachers, good morning all. My father was a sharpshooter trained in the military. He taught me how to shoot and how to handle guns safely. It was quite a long process. It is incredibly naive to believe that just anybody can be effectively trained to respond to a live shooter. Teachers are by nature nurturers. They are neither police nor military. P.S. I am strongly in favor of gun control, and that's from Rosalind. And then, and Alyssa says, can you repeat the information about the Mothers for Gun Control?
Moms Demand Action is the group.
Moms Demand Action.
Moms Demand Action.
Okay, you did it. Great. And Paul says, nitro and glycerin. On video games and gun violence, of course, Japan doesn't have the gun violence with the equal amount of video game usage because they don't have the guns. Nitrogen is not very dangerous until you combine it with glycerin. Ban assault rifles now. And that's for
Amen.
And James says, Alan is right on. Now that I have your attention, she always does that. He always says, on the subject of Australia, and I have some friends that live there, after their mass shootings and the legislative change, they did have a gun take back of all types of guns from hand to high-powered and not just the high-powered. However, Australia has more guns now than before the mass shooting, but with the legislation in place, the guns are not in the hands of irresponsible individuals. Not saying more guns is good, I'm for less, which is an interesting fact, and that's from James. And then Claire said, the Miami Herald ran a article last week on Florida school bullying, remembering that the purpose of a child with learning differences who had been expelled more than once from both parents and was bullied. I support gun-free schools just as I support no idling zones and no bullying. Let's put the children first, from Claire. And Laura says, hello, panel. As a former educator, I am absolutely appalled by the idea of arming our teachers. If there isn't the money to purchase school supplies or fix the crumbling structures, how are teachers going to afford the guns? And that's all I can read on that because we're moving ahead here.
Yeah.
Gordon said, women and children are the answer to America. Hi, panel. Old white males have proven they can't do an effective job of running our country. It's great to see women and children stepping to the forefront. I hope we listen to them. They are more in tune with our country's needs. Thanks. Love your show, from Gordon. That's Gordon. And then the last letter.
All right.
Is from Bryn. Who says, arming teachers is not a solution to the problem of school shootings, but it would provide an additional economic market for guns. And that's from Bryn. Okay, I'm done.
Well, thank you for that. Our email address is panel@wamc.org. And the panel today consists of Alan Shartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and chairman of the Capital District Latinos, Dan Arizari, who wrote a piece in Sunday's Albany Times Union, Latinos Look for Hope on the Road to Dystopia. I would say this is not an optimistic piece.
And the first question I need to know, mm-hmm. being a full professor at two institutions, is how would you define dystopia?
Well, it is basically a state where everything is kind of negative and depressing and not where we want to be. I don't know if that's the academic definition.
No, that's fine. Fine.
Does he pass the audition?
Yes.
Give us the Cliff Notes version of this.
Well, basically, I tried to draw a connection between the DACA community, the 1.8 million people who are in very dubious status at this point because of congressional inaction, and the status of Puerto Rico. And I know that sounds a little bit kind of weird to try to do, but what I was basically saying in the piece is that I believe in the promise of America. But by the same token, I know that there are forces at work that are trying to pull us apart, right?
No
question. That are trying to say that some people are better than others, that America's welcome mat is basically being replaced by the cold embrace of ICE. And I kind of use that as a device in the piece, because I really do feel that there is a parallel here. And the parallel is Puerto Rico is a colony. And it's probably the last remaining colony, and you would know this, maybe not by strict definition. It's called the Commonwealth.
Right? It's Guam, of course.
Right. But then when you think about it, it really, without representation in Congress, without the ability to become a state, because, you know, the Republicans are never going to have that, we've been kind of destined to be neither here nor there.
No, I'm a lover of Puerto Rico. I have to tell you that. Have been since I was raised in a particular household, and my mother's closest friends were Puerto Rican. But I have to ask you, how do we know that what you're saying is correct? In other words, whenever they've had a plebiscite on statehood, it's failed.
It has, but it's also about, it's almost like polling. When you ask the question a certain way, you're going to get a certain answer. And the other thing is that, you know, we created in Puerto Rico, the United States has created a dependency on a lot of different government programs, because you have a situation where people are the incredible rates of unemployment, poverty throughout the island. So if you ask somebody, you know, we might take away your food stamps and your Section 8 housing if you decide that you want to go independent, or you can remain dependent on all these government programs that we allow you to have. Pick one. What do you think is going to happen?
Not only pick one, but we're setting you up in such a way as you are so marginalized in terms of your ability to get by that the whole governmental and economic structure is broken.
So what I was trying to say in the piece also is that we were promised to be considered citizens of the United States. And so when we come from the island to the mainland, right, those folks that Teresa was talking about in Orlando and such places, they're allowed to go and register to vote. Of course, they have to register, but they have American citizenship. However, if you look at how we've been treated, the island has been treated under this scenario with FEMA, and the way the federal government has ignored what the island is suffering and how the island is suffering. And they've basically, their response has just been one scandal after another of these privatized outfits going in. A one-woman firm that was supposed to distribute 30 million meals. This is what FEMA did. They contracted with a one-woman firm to distribute 30 million meals. So we're not serious about the response. And it was just like, they totally ignored, Republicans totally ignored Katrina, right? Shouldn't they have learned by now that you don't approach a disaster in the same way?
Yeah, let me ask you a question, Dan. What's the, and it's a cynical question, mm-hmm. what's their cynical incentive for learning that lesson? In other words, what? They're going to start doing what's right these days as opposed to what's politically attractive to them?
I totally agree. I think that we have a situation here where we are second-class citizens. I mean, when are on the island of Puerto Rico and you cannot vote for president...
And you don't have a congressional representative.
And you don't have a... Exactly. So what does that make you? Isn't that pretty much like what the colonies rebelled against England for?
So let's assume statehood for Puerto Rico, something I've always liked.
Mm-hmm.
As you just said, the Congress ain't going to do it mm-hmm. unless there is a trade-off. So that's how we got Alaska, you know, and mm-hmm. Hawaii, and one was Republican, one was Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another trading partner we can look at here? Probably not. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that basically, especially under this current regime and the way that they're so against immigration, against things that we have held dear throughout our history, they're never going to allow Puerto Rico to become a state, because we want to hold on to our culture. We want to hold on to our language. And that's always been a bone of contention. I think that that's probably one of the biggest impediments. But what's happening now is even the Republicans on the island have seen that Trump and the Republicans here see Puerto Rico as not worthy somehow. And to add insult to injury, if as if the devastation on the island wasn't enough, they have touted this tax reform bill, which treats Puerto Rico like a foreign country. So I think basically you have your answer from Congress and from the President of the United States. We don't give a bleep about you because the hedge funds already got you over the barrel. You have basically austerity measures in place. You've reduced the federal minimum wage from $8 to $4. We're going to starve you, and maybe we'll just sell the island bit by bit to foreign investors. And then there are already more Puerto Ricans on the mainland than on the island. 5 million as opposed to 3 million. And it's the first time in the history of the island that has happened.
And what is the implication for, very quickly, because I know we're running out of time here, but what is the implication for our domestic politics? There are those people who think that, you know, Puerto Ricans are going to register to vote, and that's going to be real trouble for the Republicans. Nevertheless, I don't know.
It is not inevitable. What has to happen is organizing. I think that there are groups out in Florida that are trying to do that. I think right now people are nervous because people from the island are not registering in the numbers that they need to in order to affect the kind of change that we would hope we can produce in Florida.
So where's the in-migration coming from? Is it Florida and New York? Where are the major groups?
I think the majority of the people who are relocating have landed in Florida because there are communities there that have, you know, preceded them. The brain drain has been going on for a long time in Puerto Rico. So a lot of professionals have migrated to the states. So I think between Florida and New York City, that's where the majority of the diaspora is taking root.
And nothing's changing. You know, my PhD advisor, a brilliant woman named Elena Padilla, she wrote a book called Up from Puerto Rico. It was the first Puerto Rican in-migration study. I don't think anything's changing.
Oh, no, it's not. It's because the United States has always had a policy of an escape valve. When things get bad on the island, they made it very easy to relocate to the states. But that creates a problem because when you think about it, you don't have a home. You're constantly moving from one place to the other because of employment, because of poverty, et cetera.
So, Dan Irizarry, toward the end of your Sunday commentary in the Times Union, you write a nice piece of prose, this: we can live under the red, white, and blue, but there is no room in her constellation for another star. My question for you is, would you prefer that they make room on the flag for another star, or would you go for full-on independence?
Well, I'm an old independentista, but that's because of my political leanings from way back. I think Puerto Rico has never gotten the opportunity to stand on its own, but there are other island nations that have proven that they can be independent and that they can live on their own. But Puerto Rico, in 1898, just as we were getting ready to get out into the international community as a nation, we were invaded by, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and his gang, and that was the end of that.
Interesting. Very interesting, because I have a question for you then, a follow-up question on Ray's excellent question. And that is, first of all, you can always make, I want you to know, Ray, you can always make another room for another star. We've done it before.
Yes.
And then do you think if given the choice, the Congress, the power elite in the United States would rather have you or have Puerto Rico as an independent nation or as a political ally of the United States and give it statehood, if those were the choices?
Well, I think that's a good question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to it, but here's part of the dilemma, right? For years, we were told Puerto Rico should not be independent because of Cuba.
I was just going to say the same thing. Yeah, right.
So, of course, they're going to, you know, Castro is going to take over Puerto Rico, and then we'll have two islands, you know, surrogates of, well, none of that exists anymore. Cuba is staggering because of the blockade and because of other factors. Puerto Rico might be that, given the opportunity, it can rise to the occasion because it has an educated population. The problem right now is they've all moved to the states because of hedge funds and because of the debt and because of Maria.
We only have about a minute here. Dan Irizarry, how do people find out more about Capital District Latinos?
Well, you can go to our Facebook page. We have a Facebook page, CD Latinos. You can call the Camino Nuevo Clinic. I don't have the number disposable, okay, but you can look it up. If you are in need of bilingual services for opioid and other addiction treatment programs. And you can look for us as we begin to consult with the community about what they want to see happen at St. John's Church.
Well, thank you all for being here today. A fun panel, and thanks to everybody who weighed in via email. Thanks to Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Dan Irizarry. This is The Roundtable. It's just about 24 minutes after 10. Much more to come.